Good Friday morning to you. My name is Dr. Ed Ackerley, and I'm the host of the Friday Morning Voice, where we talk about the good things going on in businesses and organizations in Tucson. And in our second hour, we talk about Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And Matt Neely, something good's going on at the University of Arizona. We're going to go to a football game tomorrow.
Indeed, for the first time in a few weeks.
Yeah, homecoming starts at 7:30 a.m. Homecoming starts tailgating. And so,
you know what Grant Kruger says?
What's he say?
You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
There you go. There you go. I like that. So, we'll see if we can break into Arizona Sands again and come up and see you and Kelly.
There
so we'll
go.
See if we can
all
get
right.
there.
All right.
Well, great. Well, this morning we're going to talk about good things going on in Tucson, and our first guest is Brianna Henderson. She is the CEO of Harmony Community Foundation, Harmony Hospice Care here in Tucson. And good morning to you, Brianna.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? You're on the radio, but you're also live on Facebook and YouTube at 10:30 The Voice, so where people can see us as well as hear us. So.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, I have a face for...
I would have brushed my hair.
I have a face for radio, they say, so there you go. Hey, congratulations on the success that Harmony Healthcare, Community Healthcare and Foundation have had over the years, and... for people that don't know what Harmony Hospice is, can you tell us a little bit about your history?
Absolutely. So I am the owner and CEO of Harmony Community Healthcare.
Got it.
It's a big word, lots of words there.
Right. It's right there in front of my face. So,
yeah. That's the way it works.
That's why I brought it so I could read it. There you go.
I'm here to correct you. It's okay. Yeah. But I think most importantly for me, my background, I'm a social worker.
Right.
So I started Harmony going on 10 years ago.
Wow.
With really just the dream to keep hospice, kind of the grassroots social service model that it was meant to be. So going on 10 years,
and
I started as Harmony Hospice.
Right. That's where I got that from.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. So we were Harmony Hospice. Within the last couple years, I think, we changed to Harmony Community Healthcare because we not only provide hospice care, but we have a community-based palliative program. We have a whole bereavement program. We have a whole education program. So it's more than just hospice now.
But let's start with hospice because that's where you started. What is hospice, and what are people... When people hear the term hospice, what kind of services are you providing?
So when people hear the term hospice, they go, no, I'm not dying. Don't talk to me about it. You'll give me the hospice bug and kill me.
So
I've been trying to educate the public about what hospice really is. And it's a service for folks who are at end of life. And that could mean 6 months. That could mean a year. There's no, nobody knows when the end is the end. So we have an interdisciplinary team that really just holds the patient and the family's hand to walk them on that journey.
Right. And then you also have expanded in palliative care, which is kind of an adjunct to hospice care. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the palliative program that we have. So we are a community-based palliative program. So hospice, you have to have a terminal diagnosis and you have to stop seeking curative treatment.
Mm.
So the nice thing about our palliative program is that we are able to see patients who have some kind of terminal disease, but they still want to seek treatment. They still want to do, the surgery. They want to see the specialist. Most of our folks are pursuing chemo or radiation, and we're able to, again, have that interdisciplinary team attached to them where we can walk the journey, where sometimes our folks graduate from our palliative program and are in recovery from cancer, which is wonderful. And sometimes they'll transition over to the hospice program.
Right. Can you tell me a little bit about when's the right time to make that call of, you want some services, you don't actually know what you want or what the family member wants. When do you make that call? When's the right time to make that call?
I would suggest anyone who has any kind of terminal or chronic disease, give us a call. The earlier you can get on our services, the better outcomes we have. Because again, with both programs, it's a lot of education. So education's power, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we can kind of help, again, plan for advanced directives. We can help plan for you know, legal issues, tons of resources that we can implement to help people along that journey.
And part of that is what you said at the very beginning is that you're helping people, you're holding their hand. This is a process that's obviously we all have to go through it eventually, but it's not something we want to do perhaps, but it's something we have to do. And many times people are facing it for the first time with, say, a parent or something like that. And so they don't really know the process or how it's all going to play out. And that's where you step in and help with before they move into hospice care. You maybe give them some support and then walk them through that whole entire process, right?
Absolutely, because the healthcare system is really complicated. So, right. You know, we have a lot of, you know, husbands and wives, and the wives, you know, maybe 7 years old and trying to traverse this really complicated system that right. We can just come in and say, here's where you go for this. This is how we do this. And
right.
It gives you just peace of mind.
Great. We're talking with Brianna Henderson. She is the CEO of Harmony Community Healthcare here in Tucson, where they provide hospice and palliative care for wonderful residents all over Tucson. So what are the main types of care and support that your teams provide? So we talk a little bit, of course, the one first that comes to mind is obviously that medical support and probably a little bit of walking you through the red tape of insurance and how you navigate that healthcare system, which can be cumbersome, especially if you haven't been in it and it's kind of your first time in it. And then, of course, emotional and spiritual support as well.
Yeah, so the services are really robust. But I will say not all hospices are created equally. So I really urge everybody, if you're looking into a service, get out there and do some interviews, kind of be able to make an informed decision about what services you want. So our program is, a lot of programs are kind of steering towards a medical model, mm-hmm. and we're really kind of fighting against that to say this is more than just medical.
Right.
So, not all death is painful.
Yeah, it can
which be is surprising.
It
to
can
people.
Be walking through the process with a smile and be accepting and do what you need to do, but do it with us,
dignity and peace.
Sunshine instead of darkness, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the goal. So we have our medical team, which is our medical director, who's amazing. We have our RNs. We have LPNs who kind of take care of that comfort piece. And then we have a really wonderful social services team. So we have a director of social services who oversees all of our social workers, spiritual care. We have a great volunteer program that does so much for our community.
I'm Catholic, and so we have a phrase in the Catholic Church called hatched, matched, and dispatched, which is, you get baptized, you get married, and then you have a funeral. So hatched, matched, and dispatched. And it is true that people suddenly get religion when the end is near and they, a lot of challenges facing them. They suddenly get spiritual. And I don't mean I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm just saying that's just a natural human response to this. And so a spiritual journey is as important as an emotional and medical journey as well, right? Of acceptance and what's the next steps and those kind of
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. So we talk a lot about how we have physical pain, right? Mm-hmm. We have pain from the disease, but we also experience emotional pain.
Right.
And that's where, you're at end of life and you're thinking about what's my legacy? What have I done? So that's where, a lot of spirituality comes into play, a lot of reflection.
Abraham Maslow called it self-actualization, and that's kind of that tip of the pyramid where you talk about, self-actualization as you pull up a chart of Abraham Maslow's.
It's my favorite.
Yeah. But that whole self-actualization of kind of saying, did I run the good race? Did I fight the good fight? Was I a good citizen? Was I a good person? What are people going to say in my eulogy about me as a person? You think about that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And I think it's a time where people, maybe haven't been so proud of some things that they've done in their life. So it's a time where you can call your brother and say,
right.
Hey, I'm sorry I stole your birthday money.
Right. 61 years
five.
Ago. Yeah, right.
Which
right.
my brother did.
Oh, yeah. So you're getting back at him. Yeah. I see. Okay, right. He's paid that debt back about a million times, hasn't he?
Not enough.
Yeah, not
It'll
enough.
It'll never be enough.
That's great. That's great. Let's talk just briefly before we go to break about where is some of this service provided? Where do you go? What are the settings, home, assisted living, nursing facilities? Where is Where are these services offered?
So as far as hospice care, I think that's a really big myth. People think if they go hospice, I want to stay at home. Don't take me away.
Right.
And hospice is really just a service for wherever you call home.
Right.
So that could be assisted living. That could be your home. That could be
your kid's home
under the bridge in Tucson. That could
right.
be, your kid's home, wherever you call home.
Right. So wherever you're living, hospice care can be given to you as you walk through that journey. And palliative care, same way, right?
Absolutely, yep. Yeah. But in palliative care, we have a little bit more flexibility. We can see patients in a hospital setting.
Right.
We can see them in a long-term care setting.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your care team and culturally sensitive issues and honoring veterans and those types of things with hospice and palliative care. We're speaking with Brianna Henderson. She is the CEO of Harmony Community Healthcare. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, and you're listening to The Morning Voice.
Coming up later on The Morning Voice, Sonoyta Vineyards, Arizona Theater Company, and some astronomy talk from the U of A. And Dr. Ed Ackerley, I just got a call.
Yes.
We bumped out with Fleetwood Mac's Sunny Side of Heaven.
Yes, yes.
Which is kind of on my little rotation list that I kind of like to do.
Right.
I got a nice call from somebody. He says that Michael Goodrich used to bump out with that after doing his weather segments on Channel 4. So thank you to the caller for bringing that up.
I wish I had a pocket full of peanuts. I'd throw them up
and go,
whoopee. Yeah, I love it, Michael. God bless Michael Goodrich. Yeah, he was a mainstay right before Jimmy Stewart became a mainstay.
Indeed.
So, yeah. We're showing our age, Matt Neely. We're showing our age. Speaking of which, we're speaking with Brianna Henderson. She is the CEO of Harmony Community Healthcare, providing both hospice care and palliative care and other things for residents of Tucson and family members and so forth. So, Brianna, if you could tell us a little bit about your care team, the types of people that that work with you, what kind of folks are working with you in your company?
The best.
Well, I knew that. They're all listening.
They're so the best.
We'll give them a nod. But nurses and social workers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have RNs and we also have LPNs that kind of will help support the RNs. Our LPNs are phenomenal. Hello, Tanya. Yeah. We also have a great social work team. So we do a lot of teamwork. We do interdisciplinary team meetings where we really talk about all the patients and their needs and goals of care. It's really important.
And even chaplains and volunteers who help.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We have a great volunteer pool. And then we have our hospice aides, which are the best.
Right.
They are the real foundation of our team because they're in there more than anybody else. So, they're wonderful.
They're doing the hands-on all the time.
Yeah.
Es muy importante a muchas personas así aquí en Tucson que necesita hospice care. And so we have a diverse population here in Tucson. We have over 40% Hispanic. We have other nationalities, other people from other countries coming to Tucson and living here, and they all have to face the same thing, which is eventually they have to walk towards this stuff. So you do have culturally sensitive care as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'll share a story. So I told you earlier I'm a social worker. So one of my favorite things is going out and being a social worker. So I was just recently at a palliative home, palliative visit as a social worker. And our little lady was Spanish speaking only.
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter would help translate for me, but I went back to my team and I consistently tell them that, did you know that only 7% of communication is verbal?
Right.
Yes. So I had the best visit with this Spanish-speaking only older lady through laughing, hand language. She was able to tell me that she wants me to come back and bring some of my eggs. I have a farm.
All right.
Bring some of my eggs and she's going to do tortillas and tequila. So we were able to communicate. Yeah.
That's great.
Not necessarily, but absolutely. So we do a lot in the community. We have a memory care training program that we were just able to do for Spanish speaking.
Great.
Also, so we are always looking at ways.
And you also work with veterans, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's a big part of what you do.
It's a huge part. And I'm really proud of my team. We are, last I checked, we are the only hospice at least in Pima County, if not Arizona, to have reached the 5 stars for We Honor Veterans.
Well, interesting. Yeah.
So it's a really intense program that we're really proud of, and we're constantly working with our veterans at the state home. And
how's this a good segue, Matt Neely? What's coming up on this weekend for Rockin' for Heroes, right?
That's right. On Sunday.
That's coming up on Sunday. So talk about veterans and taking care of veterans.
Yes.
Rockin' for Heroes is a great concert out of Moro Valley.
Absolutely.
And what time does that start? Noon, I think?
Gates open at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, yeah.
And the event starts at 2, and there's going to be music, free concert, free. Lexington Lab Band. I'll play some of their music in their bumps coming up today.
Great.
Great group of studio musicians. And you can go and buy food or soda or a beer or something, and support the active duty military veterans, Gold Star families, and first responders.
So, that's great.
Yeah, thank you.
So we had the Chris Moon.
We'll be there.
We had the Chris Moon Foundation on last Friday, which with a great service, and then this week we got the Rockin' for
Heroes Park in Oro Valley.
Yeah, very
right
cool.
Next to CDO High School.
Cool. So talking about taking care of those veterans, they're a big part of Davis Month in here. You know, a lot of people come into Davis Month and they have their deployment. They go away for a couple of years and they come back to Tucson because they loved it when they lived here. And so
absolutely.
And some of them face end of life care that they need. So let's talk a little bit about obviously we all have a date stamp on us, and it's going to be over at some point. How do you handle grief and bereavement with loved ones after someone passes through your process and passes? What do you do then? What kind of services do you provide then?
So we're really fortunate, again, to be local and kind of be able to create programs as we need them. And along the years, we figured out that grief doesn't start after death. It starts before. So we have a whole program about anticipatory grief.
Right.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
You know
it's coming. You just gotta face it, right?
Yeah, but a lot of families that we run into, especially folks who just find out really quickly, all of a sudden, you had a cough and you have stage 4 lung cancer.
Right.
That's hard.
Right.
So family experience all those emotions of grief.
Right.
Before the person's actually gone. So
right.
That anger, the frustration, the sadness, the bargaining.
The not knowing.
Yeah. So we have a really great anticipatory grief program.
Right. That's great.
And then after death, we have a whole entire bereavement team that not only calls, we'll go to the home. We have bereavement groups.
Yeah.
We actually do pet grief.
Right, right. That could be a day, a week, a month, a year, 2 years, 3 years. It can go on for quite a while depending on the person and their mental state and their spiritual and emotional status when someone, my parents were married for 72 years. Can you imagine losing a partner for that long?
It's
tough stuff, yeah.
That's exactly why we have the programs, because everybody's different. So our programs run for at least 13 months.
Right.
But again, we're always there for our families. They really become our family.
Right. If someone wanted to volunteer with Harmony Community Health Care and specifically the palliative care or the hospice care, where do they go to volunteer? They call you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We love our volunteers. Yeah. Our volunteer coordinator's name is Rita Grant. I hope she's listening right now.
Sure she is. Of course
she is. She's phenomenal. So if anybody's interested in volunteering.
Do they call or they go online to harmonytucson.org or where do they go?
Can call or they can go on our website, harmonytucson.org. And there's actually a volunteer application on our website.
On the website. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to look then if you're interested. Everybody needs some support sometime, and if you're of that ilk and you want to help out in that way, that would be fantastic. And so people should go to the website in order to be in touch with you. Obviously, you get referrals. I was telling you about Abella, that they had your brochures and information out, and some of the nursing homes and so forth already have your information and refer you to families and so forth. But if you're at home situation and you're looking for some care, give you guys a shout and you'll come a running, right?
Absolutely, please. And that's kind of our mission, is to be that community support for people. So if you're not sure, just give us a call.
That's fantastic. I'm going to ask you one final question. We asked this of our success guests on the Friday morning first hour. We talk about wonder, the second hour, the good things going on at the U of A. And so, and you've been successful over the last 10 years. How do you define success? That's a tough one, isn't it?
I think I feel successful because every day I wake up and I'm grateful and I'm so passionate about right. what I do. So I think that's success. I yeah. love what I do.
I love it too. I love the your type of care, the stuff that you provide has to have emotion involved in it. It has to have passion. It has to have human relations and just a real compassion for people going through a difficult time in their lives. I was at the memorial last night for four young people at the U of A who all passed in two different car accidents that were tragic. And it's just, you know, we need to go through that process together as a community and as a family, as an University of Arizona family, but also as just a community. And when people pass, it's not easy for people.
I agree. And again, all of our programs, we really... they're open to the community. You don't have to be on our hospice or right. palliative program to have bereavement.
That's
so great. Call us.
That's great. That's a nice offer. Well, thank you for being our guest this morning on The Morning Voice, Brianna Henderson. She's the CEO of Harmony Community Healthcare, and she is located at harmonytucson.org if you want to get in touch with them and talk about hospice or palliative care here in Southern Arizona. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
This is KVOI 1030 AM. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, and you're listening to The Morning Voice.
And Ed Ackerley, that is the Lexington Lab Band. They're going to be at Rockin' for Heroes at Cree Park in Oro Valley. On Sunday, gates open at 1 o'clock, free concert, and you can support veterans and Gold Star families and the whole bit.
And that's pretty amazing because they sound just like the bands they cover. It's amazing, isn't it? They are very good.
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see you out there on Sunday. Well, this is The Morning Voice, where we talk about the good things going on in Tucson and success stories and so forth. We're honored to have back with us some folks from the Arizona Theater Company. I'll introduce them to you. First, we have Marina Nelson. She is a digital storyteller and public relations manager for the Arizona Theater Company. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we also have our good friend Matt August, who is the director of The Heist coming up, which we're going to be talking about. Welcome back and good morning.
Thank you very much.
And we also have the playwright for The Heist, Arun Lakra, who is the playwright for The Heist. I'm going to talk about that in detail here coming up. Good morning to you.
Morning. Great to be here.
So we were out in the green room there, and we said, everybody hold your wallet, because there might be a heist coming up here pretty soon. So before we get into the heist itself, Marina, I'm going to pick on you, and then I promise I won't pick on you till later on. So just tell us a little bit about the Arizona Theater Company and its great history here in Southern Arizona and in Arizona, actually. And just a little bit, just a little elevator speech, if you will, about the Arizona Theater Company.
Arizona Theater Company is the official state theater of Arizona, and we operate in two cities, in Tucson and in Tempe in the greater Phoenix area. And we're in our 58th season now. So we've had a great history here in Arizona, and we have a longstanding standard of creating world-class professional theater in the state of Arizona. And we're the only LORT theater that operates in two cities. So we have a really unique model where we get to do that and bring world-class theater to two different audiences.
That's great. And one of the success stories of why we even do this show is success. And Matt, you've been here before. We've talked before, but you get to direct coming up soon. We are going to see The Heist, but you obviously have a long storied history with ATC and just a lot of different hats that you've worn over the years. Tell us a little bit about your experience with ATC and why you're just so excited and love what you do.
Oh, I love Arizona Theater Company. You know, I started here in the 2015-2016 season, coming in with a show that had the longest title ever. I won't bore you with it, but it was affectionately called Discord. And then I directed King Charles III, which was a totally different kind of play. And after that, David Ira Goldstein, who was the artistic director, he was getting ready to step down. And so I started conversations then, all the way back then, about stepping into the role of the artistic director position at the company. And you know, I, what I really really loved about Arizona Theater Company was you got to really test a show in two different kinds of markets. You know, you're down here in Tucson, which is a wonderful, very, very smart, very savvy, very motivated audience. And then you got to go up to Phoenix, which is a totally different kind of audience. Great in its own right, but different than the Tucson mm-hmm. audience. So you really got to see what you had with a play. And then in 2020, right at the end of 2022, Arizona Theater Company hired me to be the artistic director. Right. So I was then in charge of programming the entire seasons, picking the plays, staffing, hiring the directors, hiring all the designers, and coming up with the way that we were now going to do shows under my artistic vision. And it's been a real pleasure to be serving Arizona like that in the last couple of years.
And you get to direct every once in a while. You appoint yourself as director.
Every once in a while, I'm able to talk everybody into letting me do a show. You know, I had a wonderful career in New York on Broadway I lived in New York for 12 years, and I worked on Broadway for 7 of those, going all around the country to all of these different regional theaters where I got to basically bring Broadway into the local communities. That's the level of theater that Lort Theater actually is. It's the idea is to bring a Broadway level production into cities so that the citizens don't have to go to New York in order to see that kind of theater. So when I came out here to direct, I just fell in love with Arizona and mm-hmm. the company and the mission. And now I'm able to occasionally bring a very high level production like Scrooge,
right?
Or like Bob and Gina Love Story, which are the two shows that I've done since I've been here as the artistic director to life on stage. And to launch a new play into the universe by a Tony and Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and to do a new version of a holiday classic that was written to be the remake of the movie Scrooge. Mm-hmm. And now this season, we've got the American premiere of Aaron's play Heist, which is a play that did phenomenally up in Canada, in two cities in Canada. And we have the American premiere, which is a very special mm-hmm. opportunity for us. And we are throwing everything at it. And boy, is this play, this is a tricky play, and it is just a lot of fun. So I feel like throwing this into the holiday slot as an alternative to Scrooge, families are going to love this play.
Well, we got the play right here. Aaron's with us. And tell us a little bit about how this came about and how you kind of saw this and then wrote it down, and all of a sudden now it's premiering after Canada coming into America. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Sure. I was minding my own business during the pandemic, not much to do, and I received a call from an artistic director of a small theater company in Indiana mm-hmm. who had previously produced a play of mine. And he came to me with a strange proposal, and it went something like this. There's lots of good heist movies out there. There aren't any good heist plays out there.
And so we're talking about heist movies like Ocean's 11, yes. The Italian Job, Sting, those kind of...
Exactly.
Right.
And it just so happened that those sorts of movies are really important to our family. I have had two teenage kids mm-hmm. and my wife, and there was always a big negotiation when we sat down to watch something on TV, because everybody wants something different. But right. Ocean's 11 specifically was a movie that we all really loved. Mm-hmm. And so coincidentally, here's this guy knocking on my door saying, we'd like you to write a play version, some sort of a heist for the stage. And of course, I was intrigued. So I sat around and thought about it. And then I went back and I said, no. I said, there's a reason no one has done a heist for the stage, because you can't do it. Mm-hmm. How can you take all the sizzle and glitz and the Clooney and the Pitt? And in film, you have the ability to very surgically direct the audience's attention. Mm-hmm. You can have them look at a certain thing or not see a certain thing. You can use flashbacks. You can use misdirects. On stage, everyone is just staring at the stage the whole time. How can you pull something off on the audience? So I actually said no. Happily, he was very persistent and kept pushing. And ultimately, I had this revelation, I think, that what I had previously been looking at as a negative, as a drawback, as an obstacle, was actually possibly an opportunity. What could we do on stage that we couldn't do in film?
Hide it right out in the open. Right?
Exactly. You should have been there at the time when I was trying to figure this out, because that took me a while to get to. But yes, we have the audience as a captive audience watching what we're doing, But can we actually fool them while that's happening? Can we take advantage of that? And that was my little foothold into this story. And so with that little piece of information, started to build this project. And little by little, it started to take shape. And there's been some questions along the way, you know, could we actually pull this off? I started to think that, you know, which was more difficult, actually doing a heist for real or putting one off on stage? But hopefully the audience will come and corroborate this.
Yeah.
But I think
we can go steal some French jewels out of the museum in France.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, not guilty. I have an alibi.
Yeah.
I think that was the whole goal, is could we actually surprise the audience? Right. Because audiences are so savvy and sophisticated these days.
Yeah.
And the hope is we have...
So, Matt, as a director, how do you pull off that vision? How do you pull that off? Obviously, you're working in collaboration with him with that idea, but how do you pull that off as a director?
Oh, that's easy. You hire the best people that you can possibly get, right? And you surround yourself with them. And, you know, we've got an incredible design team on this show. I've got Jim Noon returning to Arizona Theater Company, who's somebody that I've been working with for years. He's got 17 Broadway shows under his belt. He's doing our set. We've got Sven Ortel, who is a world-class, world-famous projection video designer, coming in to do that. He did Aladdin and Newsies on Broadway. He does opera all over the world. I mean, he's one of the top video folks in the theater and in the opera world. We've got our local phenomenon, Kish Finnegan, to do the costumes. Right. And we're bringing back Mike Billings, who I just did Bob and Gina Love Story with, do the lighting design. And he's coming fresh off of a show on the West End in London. So this is a really great design team, and we hired an incredible company of six actors out of Los Angeles, led by Matthew Miller, and he is phenomenal in our lead, and he's surrounded by just a bunch of unicorns around him who are all hilarious and funny and joyful, and we have a great partnership with Pima Community College, where we've got one of their students in the cast, and she is terrific. She's a real up-and-comer.
That's great.
Yeah.
When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about the play The Heist, which starts November 30th at the Arizona Theater Company. And Maureen, when we come back, we'll talk with you a little bit about how people get tickets and how they can engage with the Arizona Theater Company. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after a little bit. Some words from our great sponsors. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is where we talk about success and heists. We're talking about heists this morning. We have the playwright for The Heist, Aaron Lacra, and we have the artistic director, but also the director of this performance, this play. Matt August is with us, and a digital storyteller and public relations manager, and great person to come and speak at my class at the University of Arizona, Marina Nelson. Marina, when we get started here, let's just talk before we get back into The Heist a little bit. People might be saying, when and where can I see this play? So tell us when it gets started and what they have to do to get tickets.
Absolutely. So Heist starts on November 30th and runs through December 20th. There are a couple dates to look out for if you're looking for a special discount. We have community and pride nights that are made to make theater more accessible to our communities in Tucson and in Phoenix. But in Tucson, we want to look out for community night on December 3rd and pride night on December 5th. And on those days, tickets are discounted when you use certain codes. So I would visit our website and go to atc.org/plan-your-visit.
Right.
And you look and click on the date and you use the codes that are connected with those dates to get $15 tickets from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if you miss that window for any reason, you can show up at the door half an hour before showtime and get $20 tickets.
Great.
So there are other opportunities as well for first responders, students that are running throughout the run of the show. So also when you're on that page, look for on the Plan Your Visit page, look for other discounts that are available throughout the run.
And just remind people where these plays take place. What building are they in?
They are at the Temple of Music and Art on Scott Avenue.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful venue. It's worth the ticket just to go down and be in the facility itself. It's just an amazing historical, beautiful, good acoustics too for building that old. It's not bad, huh?
Oh, it's wonderful, wonderful. We've now we amplify all of our shows now, so right. Acoustics is not a problem whatsoever, and our audience right. can hear the shows crystal clear, you know, and they're very close to the stage. We've got, you know, there's 636 seats in there, and the audience right. still feels like they can reach out and touch the actors. It's very intimate, very acoustically sound space.
It's a beautiful, beautiful venue, and so without giving away the details, let's talk a little bit about the progression of what people, when they get started and they come and see The Heist as the playwright, how are you weaving them through this play, and how do they kind of get to be part of, that was what Matt was saying, how they kind of get to be part of this process of being actively engaged in the play as it unfolds before them?
Well, I think the first thing is that when the audiences take their seats, what they will find very quickly is that Matt and his incredible designer team have put together what I call a cinematic experience. Mm-hmm. So it's a visual spectacle. And what we are trying to do is in some way create a hybrid between mm-hmm. the movie world and the stage world. So visually, I think the audience is going to be surprised and hopefully impressed by all of the bells and whistles, the technology that we have. We're taking advantage of technology. Mm-hmm. And again, without giving too much away, there's a video projection element. There may be some lasers. There may be some flying apparatus happening.
Yeah. Right.
So there's lots of things to keep the audience engaged visually. Mm-hmm. But that is a complementary piece, because the story is really what we're trying to get the audience to engage with.
Right.
And so the audience can come and sit back and let this play wash over them, and I think they'll have an enjoyable experience. However, if we have these audience members who wish to put on their detective hat and try and play along and solve the mystery as things unfold, there are clues, there are breadcrumbs. And the idea is that the audience will have their theories and we'll see whether they're accurate or not. But the idea and the hope is that the audience will be engaged not only visually, but intellectually as they process this.
That's wonderful. I was teasing Marina about speaking to my class. I just had Johnny Cruz, who's the vice president of the U of A, speak to my class this week. And we had this great discussion with the students about storytelling. And then it's old as mankind, womankind, humankind is telling stories. And as a playwright, that's kind of what you're doing. You're weaving these stories of people's lives and occasions and events and things and history and pulling them all together into a presentation. It's kind of an interesting way to tell a story, right?
I agree. I mean, storytelling, as you've just said so eloquently, storytelling goes back to the beginning of time. And ultimately, the core of any successful play or movie, I think, is the story itself. Are there compelling characters that we engage with? So, of course, yes, the bells and whistles and the visual nature of this and other projects are important, but is the story engaging? And we happen to have, I'm a little biased, but I think we happen to have some interesting characters with our, you know, there's betrayal and misdirects and who's an ally with whom. And those sorts of elements keep us engaged. And then we have these incredible actors that Matt has engaged who bring the story to life. And so I do think that it's a storytelling by the characters that's going to engage the audience.
That's great. So Matt, we've got The Heist coming. Other things you want to highlight? Other shows coming up for the rest of the season?
This is a really exciting season so far. So we've got Heist coming up for December down here and January up in Phoenix, and then that follows up right at the end of January with the Tony-winning musical Ain't Misbehaving, being directed by Del Howlett, who's just a phenomenal dancer, choreographer, director. And then right after that, we've got a show that's coming in from a very successful run on Broadway, the associate director and three-time Oscar-nominated actress, Marsha Mason, is coming in to direct that. That's The Roommate.
Okay.
And then right after that, we have a very fun, very silly version of Dracula called Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, that was a huge hit off-Broadway last year and has just sold out its entire run on the over in London. And that is we're going to end the season with a big bang on that one.
Lots of great things coming up at the Arizona Theater Company. If you're interested, where do they go to get tickets?
atc.org/heist.
That's great. That starts on the 30th here in Tucson, the American premiere of your great play, and congratulations to you on bringing it to America.
Thank you so much.
And I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's going to be great.
Excellent.
Matt, Aaron.
Thank you.
Marina, thank you all from the Arizona Theater Company. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley and Matt Neely. I was down watching the team practice yesterday. They were finishing up their practice at the Arizona Stadium. They are ready to go. Uh-huh. Looks like they're going to have a good tomorrow afternoon. They're going to do well. And we wish Coach Brennan, you know, if you take out those two games that they won in the last, they lost in those overtimes, mm-hmm. They've got a pretty good season racking up here. It's
you
looking
know,
good.
It's been a I guess a refreshing surprise or yeah. whatever, a good surprise, not a bad
right.
surprise.
Right.
There were two games.
They could have been way the sure. other way, but we've got some good things. And so a lot of good things are happening tomorrow. Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union. And we appreciate their sponsorship of The Morning Voice. Our guest for this segment is Lori Reynolds. She's a winemaker and owner of Sonoyta Vineyards. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
So, Lori, you have a great connection to the University of Arizona and the fact that someone in your family used to be a person who worked at the U of A for many years, right?
Absolutely. My grandpa, Dr. Gordon Dutt, he was a soil science researcher at the Department of Agriculture.
Okay. So we have a great tie-in. And, of course, the U of A and being a Research One institution and a land grant institution. They've had a lot to do with making sure that the wine industry in Southern Arizona is positive. So you've got a great festival coming up tomorrow, and we encourage people to stop in maybe before they go to the game or just come on down, because if you haven't been to Sonoyta Elgin area lately to see the beautiful wineries and specifically Sonoyta Vineyards, what a beautiful place. So tell us a little bit about your new release festival tomorrow.
Oh, we're so excited about our new release festival. We will be releasing our 2023 Estate Pinot Noir. We will be having the Village of Elgin Winery, the Elgin Distillery, Twisted Union Wine Works, Lightning Ridge Cellars, Wilhelm Family Vineyards, and Desert Blossom Winery out of Sierra Vista. So all of these folks will be here on one property. Tickets are $25 pre-purchase or $30 at the door tomorrow, which would include 8 tasting tickets and the souvenir glass. And then we'll have a food truck, Las Vegas, and we'll have live music by Jeff and Jill Driscoll all day. It's just going to be a whole lot of fun. And of course, Father Greg will be coming at noon to bless everybody's new releases.
Right.
And it's a fun day. Bring your kids. It's family friendly. Mm-hmm. If you have fur babies, as long as they're leashed and they're polite, they're more than welcome to come. And it's just a fun day. There's lots of artisan vendors that will be here, jewelry vendors. There's a olive oil and balsamic vinegar vendor coming, chocolate vendors. So people can like start stocking up for any of those fun Christmas gifts or any holiday gift.
Right. Yeah, you even get some chocolate and wine for a Thanksgiving time frame and stock up and surprise your guests when they come over with some Sonoyta Vineyards new release and a little bit of chocolate as well. That goes well together. And also it's a great time to just, if you haven't been to the drive to Sonoyta, of course you take it frequently, Lori, but every time I come down to visit you, I just am just so impressed with how beautiful southeastern Arizona is, and driving through the hills and the greenery. We had a little bit of rain, so the greenery of all the hills is beautiful, and it's almost like you're going back in time a little bit. It's kind of a fun, relaxing drive, and then when you get down to the winery, it's a fun and exciting opportunity. So a neat, quick, easy drive from Tucson, right?
Oh, super easy. You just get onto I-10. It's exit 281 that makes you go south on State Route 83. It's depending on where you are in Tucson. If you're in the Vail area, it's a, you know, probably 45 minutes
right.
or less, or Green Valley, 45 minutes. But if you're in Marana, it's going to be about an hour,
mm-hmm.
or up in Oro Valley, about an hour. It's like you said, Ed, it is just a beautiful drive coming through the Santa Rita Mountains. And it's just very peaceful. I know a lot of motorcyclists, they mm-hmm. love going down that road. It's nice and lots of fun turns, and it's just, it's beautiful out here right now. We're still, we're not as green as we were in September,
right,
but
right.
we're still pretty green out here, and the grass is beautiful, and yeah, it's gorgeous.
And as they say, Shamrock, the cows are outstanding in their field, right? Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes,
there's
yes,
oh,
yes.
there's lots of cows. There's always lots of cows, yes.
Yeah. Well, people who haven't been down to Sonoyta Vineyards in a while, by the grace of God, you had a little fire that came through, swept through the vineyards there, and so you were out of commission for a few short weeks, and or I'll say months, but weeks that you were out, and but a kind of good timing, because then you were able to rebuild and restructure the vineyard. And so if people haven't been and seen what you've done to the inside of the winery, it's beautiful and it's amazing, a perfect spot for an event like this.
Oh yeah, we have definitely, if you haven't been here in a few years, we've totally gutted the whole back of the, where the production area is, and rearranged the whole scheme. And it's just, it's much more open and inviting, and it's, yeah, it makes it a perfect venue mm-hmm. for wine festivals and any party, business right. meetings, and all kinds of things.
I'm struck by the lighting, you know, when you go in there, it has just even beautiful lighting, and so it just kind of gives it an intimate, nice structure, and as you say, if you're thinking about doing something unique and different for your holiday get-together for your staff or your organization, or even for a little fundraiser, think about, come on down to Elgin and talk with you at Sonoyta Vineyards and maybe come up with something really creative. Can you imagine if you got a bus full of people from your organization and took them down to the winery and they got to do a little tour and they got to sample some wines, then everybody leaves with a bottle of wine for their holiday gift? What a great, exciting event that would make for a company that's looking for something unique and different.
Absolutely. We actually, this Wednesday, we just hosted a bank, did a meeting out here. I don't know if it was a quarterly meeting, I don't know what, but they had a great time. They rented out our rental room and they did their whole meeting with all of the business and the banking staff, and it was, they had a great time.
Yep. So right above the where you're sampling the wine and so forth, right above you there, you have a nice a veranda, a nice patio overlooks the vineyards, with a nice banquet room, or whatever you would call it, a meeting room, a conference room, mm-hmm. where people can come. And so if you have a private event and you want to have, you know, even a wedding reception, you could do it there and have a nice place to, and then it's just the ambiance. It's almost, if you, you know, just sit out and kind of just relax and enjoy the ambiance of the vineyard, it's just so peaceful in your place. It's just amazing how peaceful it is. And I'm always captured by the tranquility of coming down to a lot of stuff going on, a lot of people running everywhere, lots of things going on. You and your team got your fire hats on, running around like you have to at an event like this. But for those of us that show up, it's just so peaceful and so tranquil. And if you can have a glass of wine in your hand and kind of enjoy the moment, it's really kind of fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, if the wind cooperates, because, you know, we do live in Elgin where the sun right. shines and the wind blows, but sitting outside underneath those beautiful Arizona oak trees right. is pretty peaceful.
Yeah. And just to the south of you there, you've got that big, I call it the pasture, but it's a big grass field. And that's where some of the tents will be up and some of the vendors will be over there. And just going over there, it's kind of like a park. And you kind of sit there
yeah.
and enjoy. And when I was a little kid, I was the youngest of seven. We had a big old family, and one of the things we used to do is go places like Oxford Plaza and so forth, and we would people watch. And one of the fun things to do when I go down to your wineries is to just kind of have a glass of wine and meet new people and people watch and just kind of engage with other people who are all there for the same reason. They want to taste delicious wine and have a great time. So it just creates a wonderful atmosphere for people who are visiting, especially if you haven't been in a long time or if this is your first time. What a great experience it is for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit, you're the winemaker, and this 23 that you're talking about, so that's almost 3 years ago now, you put some wine in some bottles and it's ready to go.
I did, yes. And we bottled about 6 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And so it has been bottle aging for the last 6 months, and we are just really excited to release The Pinot Noir. We don't get a Pinot Noir harvest every single year, but when we do in 2023, we did have a nice little bumper crop. So I've got about 100 cases. So it's a small bottling, but it's a beautiful, well balanced, nice and fruity, very smooth, easy to drink wine. Lots of red fruit, a little bit of dark fruit, a little vanilla, and it's a beautiful wine. It'd pair beautifully with anybody's turkey coming up at the end of this month.
Sold. I'll take it. sounds delicious, and can't wait to give it a taste. So that we'll come back after the break. We'll talk a little bit more about what it's like working down in the Sonoyta area, and you and your family doing great. Now you got your little wee ones, which are now driving and in high school, and it's amazing how some of them have helping out with your husband and the staff, and being part of the crew now. It's kind of interesting. So you do it like you should. You have a bunch of kids and have them all work in the family business. It's a wonderful plan.
Yes, sir. They were raised in it just like I was raised at the winery. So, yeah, they know more about wine than most adults.
It's been amazing to watch them grow up around the winery. And now that you go down there and they're on the driving the little carts and stuff, it's like, holy smokes, you were just a little baby the last time I was here. And now they're taller.
Time is a thief.
They're all taller than some. The older ones are taller than you are, so it's pretty fun.
They're all taller than me. Yeah. It doesn't take long when you're only 5 foot tall.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, my oldest. Yeah, he's 6'2", and he's only 16.
16 years old. Yeah. Well, yeah. This we're talking with Lori Reynolds, the winemaker and the family that owns the Sonoyta Vineyards, and we're talking about the great new release festival, which will happen tomorrow at Sonoyta Vineyards. We'll come back after the break and give you some more details on what it's like to be a winemaker in Southern Arizona. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We'll talk a little bit more about Sonoyta Vineyards and the wonderful new release festival coming up tomorrow. I just want to mention that we are still taking donations for Thanksgiving boxes. $45 helps us feed a family of four. We've got six schools: Santa Cruz, St. John's, Utterback, Apollo, Ochoa, and Mission View schools. If you'd like to donate $45 to help us with that, hey, maybe a bottle of wine. What do you know? That'll kind of make it everybody's. That meal is being prepared by Chef John Hone and his culinary staff at Gap Ministries. And if you're interested in helping us, we could sell about 90 more. I got about 90 more to go between now and Thanksgiving. So if you can help with 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever you can afford, go to coachesforcharity.org. That's coaches, the word for, F-O-R, charity.org, and you can make a donation. We'd certainly appreciate all the help you can give us in helping feed some less fortunate people during the holiday season. Well, we're talking with Lori Reynolds. Lori is the family that owns Sonoyta Vineyards. Her grandfather was the one that helped kind of establish the American viticultural area down in Sonoyta, looked around the state and said, where can we go to grow some wine? And what is an American viticultural area designation, Lori? What does that mean?
It means that the federal government here in America has designated certain regions to be unique in for grape growing conditions and have unique terroir to have unique wines.
And and part of it has to do with being 4,500 feet above sea level and just the mix of the soil that's there. So it's kind of a combination of different things that make it a unique growing area.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, here in the Elgin area, we're at 5,000 foot elevation. But of course, in Arizona, water access is key. So every vineyard out here has wells that we water from. There's no dry farming in Arizona. We don't get the rains at the right time. But being raised by not only my grandfather, but my mother, who are both two soil scientists, soil is everything. And we have a very unique, just beautiful clay, loamy, they call it Terra Rosa soil out here in the Elgin and Sonoyta area. And it has a little bit of clay to it, so it helps lock water into it. A little bit of sandy, there's a little limestone. It's soil is everything.
Right. And you, your grandfather and a couple people helped found Sonoyta Vineyards back in 1983. And so you have a pretty strong heritage, and you, of course, you and your husband and family are now the operators, and but the rest of your family participates and helps you make decisions and tells you sometimes they
yes,
like
the, definitely. We're a family business. Yeah. If you've ever been in a family business, everybody knows. Everybody has different ideas, and we try to make sure everybody's ideas get heard.
That's great. That's great. But a great legacy and heritage. This segment is talking about wonder and success and so forth, and it's been great to see what you've been able to do. And of course, your grandfather being a U of A soil scientist, it's a great tie-in with wonder and the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. So tomorrow from 10 to 5, we've got the new release festival. Can you talk about some of the other wines that you have, that are your staples that you have all the time? And when people go down, they can sample a pretty big variety of different kinds of wines that you have available.
Oh, absolutely. We're open Wednesdays through Monday. So the only day we're closed is Tuesdays, 10 to 4. But some of our definitely all-time favorites would be our Arizona Sunset, which is a beautiful semi-sweet rosé. We have our Angel Wings, Sonora Blanca, our Mi Casa, which is a beautiful red blend of Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Syrah. And we also have some straight varietals as well. Our Merlot and our Cabernets are also very popular. So those are definitely some of our most popular wines.
And if they want to taste the new release from 23, they come down tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about, maybe you can give them a little discount with a code. Tell them how do we get the code to get some advanced tickets and get a little discount on what you're selling there.
Absolutely. Just to kind of help curb all the fees from the Eventbrite website, we're given, if you type in the code new release, all one word, no spaces, capital N for new, capital R for release, you'll save $5 on every ticket. So please go ahead if you want to save some money on those tickets. It will cut all of the fees, and come on down, save some money, and enjoy your day.
And if you have a spur of the moment tomorrow morning and you heard about this and then you said, we're not doing anything today, let's get going, you can still go down and buy tickets at the door for $30 and you still get the full experience. And you can bring a carload of people with you and come back with a trunk full of wine for the holidays, which is always an important thing. So I'd like a glass of that, as they say. let's talk a little bit about, I can't come tomorrow, I've got a couple things going on, but I'd love to have some wine for the holidays. You do ship. You're licensed to ship in the state of Arizona, and so people can call you up and talk with you about the kinds of wines, what kind of event they're having, and how many people, and how much you might need, and the different varieties that you have. And then you could customize a shipment to them, and for $30, they can have it delivered right to their house, right?
Absolutely. For $30, you can have, whether you order one bottle or you order a couple cases, it's a $30 flat fee that we charge, and shipments go out every Thursday.
So if you want to order some of the new release, give a call today so Lori can reserve a case for you or a couple of bottles of that. And if you'd like to order some of the staples that she has, now would be a good time to order that for the holidays. Of course, it's. I encourage you to go down to Sonoyta because it's just a wonderful drive, a great experience, and it certainly gets you out of the rat race of what's going on in our world and community and around us full time here. But that'll give you a little respite from all that. And you can, by the way, have delicious wine, eat some good food from Las Vegas, and listen to the Driscolls, play some music, and have a wonderful, and buy some things, buy some chocolate, buy some, is the honey guy there, the guy that was doing honey, is he there?
Yeah, he's here.
He's awesome. That his little booth with all those different kinds of honey is phenomenal. And then lots of artisans and crafts are available as well. So, Lori, you do great work, and we appreciate all you do for the other wineries in Southern Arizona. You're one of the people that pulls them all together and invites them to your shows and so forth, and we appreciate that you're so giving and caring about the industry, as well as obviously trying to make Sonoyta Vineyards profitable, but you're also trying to make the region the best it can be. So thanks for all you do in coordinating that with all the other wineries and inviting them to your events.
Oh, thank you. I want to see the wine industry in Arizona just explode. It's a wonderful thing.
Right, right. So tomorrow is the day. If you'd like to get down to the new release festival, Father Greg, Monsignor Greg Adolf will be blessing the new releases at noon tomorrow, but you can get there as early as starting at 10 through 5 o'clock tomorrow. There'll be entertainment, there'll be food, there'll be shopping, there'll be chocolate, there'll be honey, there'll be lots of great, and some new release wines that you just have to taste to believe them. They're wonderful, and we appreciate all the good things that happen down in Sonoyta, and good luck to you and your family tomorrow. It's going to be a great, great day, and hopefully lots of people will come in and enjoy what you have to offer there. Thank you, Lori, for being with us this morning. That's Lori Reynolds. She's the winemaker and part of the family that owns Sonoyta Vineyards, the oldest winery in southern Arizona, and actually one of the oldest in the West, family-owned and doing their thing for so many years, since 1983. And Wonder is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union. We'll come back after a quick break, and we'll talk with a newly minted Regents Professor at the University of Arizona, and we'll talk with him about what it's like to have that distinction and his looking up to the stars and what's going on out in the universe. This is Wonder, and you're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice, where we're talking about Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona. I had the great privilege a week or so ago, to go to the 6th, I think, annual Luminaries event, where they highlighted wonderful professors who are doing great research and work in a vast array of different areas of research and academia. It was amazing, and I was telling Dennis that I was sitting in the, I came, I shook hands with everybody, sat in the back row, and I was going to have the lights go down, and then I was going to feign like I had to go to the restroom or something and sneak out and never come back. And I stayed for the entire thing. It was just fascinating to see the wonderful talent that the University of Arizona has, and highlighting some of those faculty members and them getting their recognition. And three people got to get the highest distinction of what a professor would get at the University of Arizona, and that's called a Regents Professor Award. And we want to congratulate and welcome to the Morning Voice microphones Dennis Oritsky, one of the newly minted Regents Professor at the University of Arizona. So congratulations to you and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A little bit humbling, isn't it, to be singled out and say that you get the highest honor of all the faculty on campus? You know, there are other Regents Professors who have gotten that in earlier years, and some of them, you know, are still teaching and so forth. Some are retired, but it's a pretty interesting distinction, and accolades flowing in for you. So when they told you, what did you think about that when they told you you were going to become a Regents Professor?
Well, yeah, it is overwhelming when you think back on, you know, all the people you've known who have been Regents Professors, and you're part of that group now. So that feels pretty amazing.
Well, well-deserved. You're the deputy director of the Stewart Observatory out of the College of Science, and you're an astronomer by trade, and you teach students about astronomy, and you do a lot of research in astronomy. Astronomy is a fascinating career, isn't it? How did you get started? As a little kid, were you fascinated by astronomy?
Yeah, it started way early. Elementary school was sort of the tail end of the Apollo program,
right?
So I got into that. And then Cosmos, Carl Sagan, was amazing.
People ask me what my favorite book is. The first is the Bible. The second is the book I wrote, Creating Magic. And the third is Cosmos, because it's a textbook, but it sure explained it kind of in a real terms that I could understand as a young man. So
yeah, he was just such a great sort of poet of science that it really sort of sparked everybody's interest. And then after that, I just started reading other public, lay people books on black holes and things like that. And how could you not be interested? I think every kid at some point goes through a stage where they're interested in space. And so for me, the question when I look back is, how did I think I could make a living at this? And I guess I was oblivious, and my parents didn't do their due diligence. And so here I am.
Yeah. But now you're a Regents Professor and you're doing just fine. And that's a good place to be. You know, I'm like you. When I was a little kid, I was just fascinated by just being out there. I remember one time being over at summer school in Italy and laying in a cornfield and looking up, and at the time I was out in the middle of nowhere in Italy, and so that's just, it was one of the first times I'd seen it down in Rocky Point when Bill and I and our family would go down to Rocky Point. But I looked up and there seemed to be like 1,000 times more stars than I had ever seen before in my life, and just amazing to me. So when we're in the city of Tucson and you look up, you see some stars. But when you get out in no man's land and there's no light, oh my goodness gracious. And then the other thing that's amazing to me is on my feeds, on my social media and stuff, I'm getting something almost every single day of a new discovery, a new thing, a new something, that new technology or something like that. Your field is just moving along at comet pace, right?
It's been incredible for my entire career. It's always been continually developing.
Right.
And yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles, so I could see 5 stars.
Right.
So in fact, once I got a telescope when I was in high school and I got a little telescope to go see, we used to drive it out to the desert to Joshua Tree because, you couldn't see anything from the city.
Right. So when you talk about being an instructor and teaching, but also doing research at the same time, we were talking earlier about you get all the sorts of questions about the world. And as you say, young people, but all people are probably curious about, and we have been since however long you think man's been on the earth, asking questions like, was there a beginning before the beginning? Was there something there? Is there, I like to ask astronomers, is there an edge to the universe? Like they used to say that you'll fall off the end of the flat earth. Is there something outside of what we can't see? And we don't know the answers to those questions yet. And those are fascinating questions to try to kind of think through and see where we are.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of interesting questions, and some of the art of being a good scientist is figuring out which questions you can address, mm-hmm. which questions are really scientific questions that you can come up with some hypothesis that you can test, versus which are interesting questions. Like, what happened before the Big Bang is an interesting question, but right. not one
answerable.
We can test.
Yeah, we can't answer for it.
So it's not in the realm of science.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of talk about resuming, as you talked about the end of the Apollo mission, about resuming manned missions to the moon and now even to Mars and making that happen. And even, I don't know how long it will take, but it takes 4 or 5 days to get to the moon and probably 4 times that long to get to Mars, maybe longer.
Much longer.
And that's just a stone's throw away. Getting any further than that, where Pioneer, the spacecrafts are out there past the heliosphere now, they're way out there, and they're still close to Earth compared to what else is out there. They've been flying for 60 years, but they're still right out the back door. And the distances that we're talking about are phenomenal, aren't they? They're mind-boggling. They're unanswerable in human scope, right?
That's right. They're unfathomable.
Right.
And that's really at the heart. A lot of people ask me about extraterrestrial life. Could aliens have come here and things like that? And the distances are just so overwhelming. So right. I suspect there is life somewhere, but it's far away.
Yeah, and for us to even know that. And of course, one of those great discoveries back in the day was when that light that we see from that star that's 14.3 billion light years away, we're seeing it today, but it's really a record of time. It actually started 14.3 billion years ago. That star may not even be there anymore, but we're seeing the light from it. And the stuff that's farthest away is moving away faster than the stuff that's close to us. So it's just all these things are just so fascinating to people. I'm a novice at this, but it just fascinates me.
Yeah, no, I used to have an analogy that I think made a lot more sense to people than it does today, but it's sort of like mail. When you get a letter, what you're seeing is what that person was thinking when they wrote the letter back. And that's the same thing when we look back out into the universe. We're seeing how it was then, not now.
That's a really good analogy, that you're seeing a moment in time. And, and even photographs, when we look at photographs, it's a snapshot. A selfie is a snapshot of a moment in time. And a lot could have transpired between when the time that picture was taken and the time we actually are seeing it and viewing it ourselves. So it's amazing. So your work, you have both, your work kind of bridges both observation and theoretical astrophysics. How do you see a balance in those two things, as theoretical but also practical at the same time, and explaining the universe as we know it?
Yeah, I think, so I'm more on the observational side, but I do try to stay in touch with the theory, because the theory is how we understand things.
Right.
It's a developing of the understanding, the models, you know, how things work. And so without theory, we don't have that. We just have a bunch of observations.
Right.
So it's key to connect the two. And often it drives the next step then. So you have a model, it makes a prediction, and then you have to go and observe to see whether that's true or not. So they're really intertwined.
Right. I like to say that, I say this all the time, whenever I can, as fast as I can, whenever I can, I say that the University of Arizona has been involved in every NASA project since its inception, and even run some of the projects like the OSIRIS-REx and the Mars mission and so forth. But researchers from Stewart and other places on campus have been involved, the mirror making and the telescopes and so forth. Since NASA was founded, the U of A is a pivotal part of that. Is there a particular discovery or project in your life, in your career at the U of A, that kind of stands out as defining kind of what you do, or is it kind of all just come together?
It's a series of things that come together. It's a growth. I mean, I think we tend to sort of highlight individual things, but really they build on a lot of previous things.
Right.
So we have a couple missions coming up, in fact. One to do exoplanets, called Pandora. One to do the gas around galaxies called Aspera. I'm involved on the science side of Aspera. But yeah, that'll be launched next year.
So, that's great. Yeah. So keep our fingers crossed that the funding for NASA and the funding for these projects stays intact. That they've already been allocated by the Congress. Let's hope that that funding stays in place, because you never know what the next 3 or 4 years is going to be in terms of funding of these important things. But there's also a model to involve some private funding in some of these things, and corporate funding and so forth. So kind of a little different model. And of course, the European Space Agency and Japan and China and other people are putting together projects as well. So we're not standing alone by ourselves, but certainly the U.S. is on the cutting edge of research in the world, and over the history of mankind, more information has come out of the United States, and specifically the University of Arizona, than any other place on the planet. So that's pretty amazing. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and I want to talk to you a little bit more about your teaching, mentorship, and legacy, and about getting that high honor of being a Regents Professor. We're speaking with Dennis Zariski. He's a professor of astronomy and deputy director of the Stewart Observatory at the University of Arizona. Wonder is brought to us by Caruso's on 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union. And you're listening to The Morning Voice.
Come on, Ed, let's all say it. Right?
Welcome back to The Morning Voice, and it's homecoming weekend at the University of Arizona, so we got a big day tomorrow starting at 7:30 in the morning, going all the way through to game day at 1 o'clock, 1:30 kickoff time, and should be a great afternoon of football with the Kansas Jayhawks. Haven't been to Tucson to play football since 1966, so it'll be interesting.
Who'd have thunk that?
Yeah, we're gonna enjoy that. We're honored to have with us this morning on Wonder, sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union, a newly minted Regents Professor, Dr. Dennis Zariski. He is a professor of astronomy and deputy director of Stewart Observatory out of the College of Science. And again, congratulations on your Regents Professorship and that fantastic award. What does that mean to you personally, by the way, just to be recognized by your peers and by the Regents and by the administration as being one of the best professors at the University of Arizona?
Yeah, it's always very, it's rewarding to be recognized for the work you've done. It's a fantastic honor.
And you have a lot of great colleagues who have done great work with you and prior to when you got there, but also now as you're mentoring them. You mentioned one just a minute ago, a Nobel Prize winner coming back, a U of A graduate, got the Nobel Prize. A little bit about that visit.
Yeah, so Brian Schmidt, he was an undergraduate at U of A some years back and went on to win the Nobel Prize for being one of the co-discoverers of the accelerating universe. He was back in town in relation to the Giant Magellan Telescope. He's now co-chair of the board of the Giant Magellan Telescope.
That's amazing. Yeah, and that's given us lots of information. We'll get us lots of information into the future. And that's it seems like every day that something comes out that explains one more little corner of what we've thought about the universe. It seems like we're getting, you know, there's a gazillion more steps to go, but it seems like we're getting a little closer every day to explaining some of this stuff, right?
Yeah, it's a golden age for astronomy. All the new facilities, all the new space telescopes, the computational power we can now bring to problems. It's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, what you and I are old enough to remember back when they had IBM punch cards and, you know, and you pull out the cards at the library and drop the drawer on the ground and the books are all in the, and now an AI ChatGPT thing can give you something in a minute and give you more. It could take me four weeks to get that when we were in school back in college, and now you can get that. So the computational power of just has just leaped ahead by leaps and bounds, and for an astronomer, that's a good thing because you want to spend your time on the observation and the studying and not so much on the computations and so forth. You want to be seeing and watching, not necessarily doing, right?
Well, we're collecting so much data that it's impossible to actually go through it by hand.
Yeah.
So, for example, the Rubin telescope's going to find a million things that vary every night. Every night. And so you have to somehow automate the search for the one or two interesting ones.
Right, right. What advice would you offer to young scientists like you and me who are little guys that looked up into the sky and said, I wonder what's going on up there? What would you do to a young person who's thinking about where they want to be in the next few years and maybe shifting over to astronomy and looking at that scientific and aspire to follow in your footsteps? What would you say to them?
Follow your passion. I think, it's a hard slog. There's a lot of work. There's this uncertainty in career path at the beginning. But if it's your passion, then you're doing what you love. And so it's a good thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, just follow your heart and reach for the stars, as they say, right? As you look to the future, you know, we've talked about some exciting new projects that are in the works here, launching in the next couple of months and years, and we obviously have a visitor through our galaxy right now that's getting a lot of attention, public attention, as it zips through the universe and on its way. And What keeps you awake at night? What questions are you thinking about? And as you work in your space, that's kind of a funny word, kind of a funny word. But as you work in the area that you work in, what questions are you asking yourself at this part of your career?
Well, one of my focus has always been dark matter. So 85% of the stuff in the universe is something we don't know.
What is that stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm always worried that we're fooling ourselves somehow.
Right.
So that's always been a concern of mine, and some of the work I've done has tried to put it on firmer footing.
Right.
But I'm still worried that there's something missing.
Our earlier segment this morning was with the Arizona Theater Company and a play called The Heist, and how are they going to be able to make that show come alive on the stage. And I just out of the blue said, it's right in front of you and it's right in front of the audience. And in order to make it work, it's right there the whole time. You just haven't seen it. And it's kind of the way dark matter is. We kind of think it's there. We kind of know it's there. We kind of see it. We kind of have a theory for how it shapes the universe. We kind of see how it works with gravity and space and space-time and all that. But we can't see it.
Yeah, we see it's effect.
We see the effect. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's almost like when you throw a stone in the water and the ripples go out, you see the ripples on the other side of the lake, but you didn't see the pebble go in the water that caused that ripple. And so we're seeing the effects of dark matter, but we're not seeing the dark matter.
That's right.
And maybe it's right in front of us. Maybe we can't see it.
Well, it's everywhere. I mean, it's flying through this room at the moment.
Right. And the problem is we just haven't figured out a way yet to see that. So,
yeah.
Well, congratulations to you again for all you've done for students over the years and what you've done for the research at the University of Arizona Student Observatory and your deputy direction there. And again, congratulations as being named a Regents Professor, one of the highest honors in the Arizona University system.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's Dr. Dennis Aritzky, our guest for Wonder, a professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona. This is Wonder, sponsored by Caruso's and Hughes Federal Credit Union. Happy homecoming.